Chapter 2. A shock to the system, going from sun-drenched Saint-Tropez to cloud-shadowed Balmoral. I vaguely remember that shock, though I can't remember much else about our first week at the castle. Still, I can almost guarantee it was spent mostly outdoors. My family lived to be outdoors, especially Granny, who got cross if she didn't breathe at least an hour of fresh air each day. What we did outdoors, however, what we said, wore, ate, I can't conjure. There's some reporting that we journeyed by the Royal Yacht from the Isle of Wight to the castle, the yacht's final voyage. Sounds lovely. What I do retain in crisp detail is the physical setting. The dense woods, the deer-nibbled hill, the River Dee snaking down through the highlands, Loch Na Garr soaring overhead, eternally snow-spattered. Landscape, geography, architecture, that's how my memory rolls. Dates? Sorry, I'll need to look them up. Dialogue? I'll try my best, but make no verbatim claims, especially when it comes to the 90s. But ask me about any space I've occupied. Castle, cockpit, classroom, stateroom, bedroom, palace, garden, pub. And I'll recreate it, down to the carpet tacks. Why should my memory organize experience like this? Is it genetics? Trauma? Some Frankenstein-esque combination of the two? Is it my inner soldier assessing every space as potential battlefield? Is it my innate homebody nature rebelling against a forced nomadic existence? Is it some base apprehension that the world is essentially a maze and you should never be caught in a maze without a map? Whatever the cause, my memory is my memory. It does what it does, gathers and curates as it sees fit. And there's just as much truth in what I remember and how I remember it as there is in so-called objective facts. Things like chronology and cause and effect are often just fables we tell ourselves about the past. The past is never dead. It's not even past. When I discovered that quotation not long ago on brainyquote.com, I was thunderstruck. I thought, who the fook is Faulkner? And how is he related to us Windsors? And so, Balmoral. Closing my eyes, I can see the main entrance, the panelled front windows, the wide portico and three grey, black, speckled granite steps leading up to the massive front door of whiskey-coloured oak, often propped open by a heavy curling stone and often manned by one red-coated footman, and inside the spacious hall and its white stone floor, with grey star-shaped tiles, and the huge fireplace with its beautiful mantle of ornately carved dark wood, and to one side a kind of utility room, and to the left, by the tall windows, hooks for fishing rods, and walking sticks, and rubber waders, and heavy waterproofs. So many waterproofs, because summer could be wet and cold all over Scotland, but it was biting in this Siberian nook. And then the light brown wooden door leading to the corridor, with the crimson carpet and the walls papered in cream, a pattern of gold flock raised like braille. And then the many rooms along the corridor, each with a specific purpose, like sitting or reading, TV or tea, and one special room for the pages, many of whom I loved like dotty uncles. And finally, the castle's main chamber, built in the 19th century, nearly on top of the site of another castle dating to the 14th century, within a few generations of another Prince Harry, who got himself exiled, then came back and annihilated everything and everyone in sight. My distant kin, my kindred spirit, some would claim. If nothing else, my namesake. Born September 15th, 1984, I was christened Henry Charles Albert David of Wales. But from day one, everyone called me Harry. In the heart of this main chamber was the grand staircase. Sweeping, dramatic, seldom used. Whenever Granny headed up to her bedroom on the second floor, corgis at her heels, she preferred the lift. The corgis preferred it too. Near Granny's lift, through a pair of crimson saloon doors and along a green tartan floor, was a smallish staircase with a heavy iron banister. It led up to the second floor, where stood a statue of Queen Victoria. I always bowed to her as I passed, Your Majesty. Willie did too. We'd been told to, but I'd have done it anyway. I found the grandmama of Europe hugely compelling, and not just because Granny loved her, nor because Pa once wanted to name me after her husband. Mummy blocked him. Victoria knew great love, soaring happiness, but her life was essentially tragic. Her father, Prince Edward, Duke of Kent and Strathearn, was said to be a sadist, sexually aroused by the sight of soldiers being horsewhipped, and her dear husband, Albert, died before her eyes. Also, during her long, lonely reign, she was shot at 8 times, on 8 separate occasions, by 7 different subjects. Not one bullet hit the mark. Nothing could bring Victoria down. Beyond Victoria's statue, things got tricky. Doors became identical, rooms interlocked. Easy to get lost. Open the wrong door, and you might burst in on Pa while his valet was helping him dress. Worse, you might blunder in as he was doing his headstands. Prescribed by his physio, these exercises were the only effective remedy for the constant pain in Pa's neck and back. Old polo injuries, mostly. He performed them daily, in just a pair of boxers, propped against a door or hanging from a bar like a skilled acrobat. If you set one little finger on the knob, you'd hear him begging from the other side, "No, no, 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 don't open, please, God, don't open." Balmoral had 50 bedrooms, one of which had been divided for me and Willie. Adults called it the nursery. Willie had the larger half, with a double bed, a good-sized basin, a cupboard with mirrored doors, a beautiful window looking down on the courtyard, the fountain, the bronze statue of a roe deer buck. My half of the room was far smaller, less luxurious. I never asked why. I didn't care, but I also didn't need to ask. 2 years older than me, Willie was the heir, whereas I was the spare. This wasn't merely how the press referred to us, though it was definitely that. This was shorthand often used by Pa and Mummy and Grandpa, and even Granny. The heir and the spare, there was no judgment about it, but also no ambiguity. I was the shadow, the support, the plan B. I was brought into the world in case something happened to Willie. I was summoned to provide backup, distraction, diversion, and, if necessary, a spare part. Kidney, perhaps, blood transfusion, speck of bone marrow. This was all made explicitly clear to me from the start of life's journey and regularly reinforced thereafter. I was 20 the first time I heard the story of what Pa allegedly said to Mummy the day of my birth. "Wonderful. Now you've given me an heir and a spare, my work is done." A joke, presumably. On the other hand, minutes after delivering this bit of high comedy, Pa was said to have gone off to meet with his girlfriend. So, many a true word spoken in jest. I took no offense. I felt nothing about it, any of it. Succession was like the weather, or the positions of the planets, or the turn of the seasons. Who had the time to worry about things so unchangeable? Who could bother with being bothered by a fate etched in stone? Being a Windsor meant working out which truths were timeless and then banishing them from your mind. It meant absorbing the basic parameters of one's identity, knowing by instinct who you were, which was forever a byproduct of who you weren't. I wasn't Granny. I wasn't Pa. I wasn't Willie. I was third in line behind them. Every boy and girl, at least once, imagines themselves as a prince or princess. Therefore, spare or no spare, it wasn't half bad to actually be one. More, standing resolutely behind the people you loved? Wasn't that the definition of honor? Of love? Like bowing to Victoria as you passed?